Welcome to this edition of Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson.
When we think of thirsting in a spiritual sense, what we're talking about is a person who comes to that place where there's an anxiety in their soul, where there's a sense that something's wrong and it needs to be righted, and nothing that I'm able to do is resolving this conflict. It's a place of conviction of sin.
Today on Back to Basics, Pastor Brian continues his study in the Gospel of John. Join us as Pastor Brian resumes his teaching on John chapter 7, verses 1 through 39, in a message titled, If Anyone Thirsts. Now here's Pastor Brian.
Now Jesus, understanding that cultural situation, he does that in a sense here. He says, my doctrine is not mine. But of course, he doesn't go back and say, well, you know, it's Rabbi Eliezer's actually. He goes back to God and he says, it's the doctrine of him who sent me. And then he says, if anyone wills to do his will, he shall know concerning the doctrine, whether it is from God or whether I speak on my own authority. Now, Jesus tells us something that's important here. He tells us that discerning truth and ultimately being saved is a matter of the human will. There are those who insist that man's will has no place in the picture of salvation. There are those who say that God is sovereign to the extent that man's will is excluded. And so salvation, they say, is completely the work of God. It has nothing to do with man. Man has no part to play whatsoever in his salvation. That's not true. It's not consistent with the Bible. At the end, of course, we will all acknowledge that we're saved because of God and His grace, but we also will not be saved unless we contribute something. And that something is belief. It's faith. It's the exercising of our will. And Jesus makes that clear here. If anyone wills to do His will. So it's a matter of the will. So the person who can't believe that the Bible is true, the person who can't believe that Jesus is really the Son of God, what they're really expressing is a will that is inflexible, a will that is not ready to bend to God's will. It's a matter of the will. A lot of times people put forth these objections to the Christian faith. Oh, well, you know, Christianity is, it's for the uneducated. It's for the ignorant. It's an unintelligent religion. I'm too smart for that, they say. Well, the fact of the matter is, it's not about intellect. It's not about that sort of thing. It's about the will. And what it really comes down to is a person just does not want to surrender their autonomy. They don't want to surrender their will. They don't want somebody to be an authority above them. That's the vast majority of people in the world today. They simply do not want somebody else telling them what to do. They don't want God telling them what to do. The whole theory of evolution came about and has become so dominant in our cultural mindset because of that very thing. You know, when you look at the lack of evidence for evolution, you wonder, how is it that people continue to hold on to this? But you know, they hold on to it for the very reason they embraced it in the first place. If you go back to some of the earliest advocates of evolutionary theory, Huxley, for example, he made it clear that the reason evolution was so appealing was because it alleviated man's moral responsibility. And that was primarily the reason why they latched onto it. And more recently, Professor George Wald of Harvard said the exact same thing. He said Darwinism was disproved 150 years ago, yet we still believe it. Why do we believe it? Because the only alternative is creation, and we cannot accept that on philosophical grounds. So he admits that this is a philosophical issue, not a scientific issue. They can't accept creation because that means there's a creator, that means there's a God that we're accountable to and must be submitted to, and that is always the root of the problem with man. His will is set against God's will. But Jesus says if anyone wills to do his will, then he'll know concerning the doctrine. Now he who speaks from himself seeks his own glory, but he who seeks the glory of the one who sent him is true, and no unrighteousness is in him. Did not Moses give you the law, yet none of you keeps the law? Why do you seek to kill me? The people answered and said, you have a demon. Can you imagine that, saying that to the Son of God? You have a demon. Who is seeking to kill you? Jesus answered and said to them, I did one work, and you all marvel. Moses, therefore, gave you circumcision, not that it is from Moses, but from the patriarchs. And you circumcise a man on the Sabbath. If a man receives circumcision on the Sabbath, so that the law of Moses should not be broken, are you angry with me because I made a man completely well on the Sabbath? Now look, this is going back quite some time, probably back a year, and Jesus is pointing to the root of their hostility toward him. It goes back to his healing of that lame man on the Sabbath day. And because he healed that man on the Sabbath day, they were angry with him and they wanted to kill him. But Jesus points out their inconsistency. He says, look, on the Sabbath day, you will circumcise a person. You disregard the Sabbath because this ceremonial thing is, in your mind, more expedient. And he says, are you angry with me because I made a man completely well on the Sabbath day? And then he says to them, do not judge according to appearance, but judge with righteous judgment. Or you could translate this, do not judge superficially. You see, they were not thinking clearly, and their judgment was superficial. And they were just looking at these little external things. Oh, he broke the law. But they weren't looking deeper at what was actually going on. He healed a man. And in God's economy, that's a priority. Now, some of them from Jerusalem said, is this not he whom they seek to kill? But look, he speaks boldly and they say nothing to him. Do the rulers know indeed that this is truly the Christ? So there's all of this chatter and there's a lot of confusion. The Jerusalemites, these are the local people in Jerusalem, they're marveling. They're saying, isn't this the one that they're seeking to kill? How is it that he's just here publicly and nobody's doing anything to him? And then they surmise, well, maybe they've come to conclude that he is the Christ. However, they said, we know where this man is from. But when the Christ comes, no one knows where he is from. Jesus cried out, as he taught in the temple, saying, you both know me and you know where I am from. I think Jesus is speaking ironically here. They were assuming that they knew him and they knew where he was from. He was Jesus of Nazareth. But you see, what they didn't know is that he was actually born in Bethlehem, the place where the Messiah was to be born. But they're assuming we know him. We know his pedigree. We know his family lineage. So Jesus says, in a sense, do you know me? Do you know where I'm from? And then he says, I have not come of myself, but he who sent me is true, whom you do not know. But I know him, for I am from him, and he sent me. Therefore they sought to take him, but no one laid a hand on him because his hour had not yet come. And many of the people believed in him and said, when the Christ comes, will he do more signs than these which this man has done? So many said, he's got to be the Messiah. What more could the Messiah do than what this man's done? So there were those that were believing in him. The Pharisees heard the crowd whispering these things concerning him, and the Pharisees and the chief priests sent officers to take him. Then Jesus said to them, I shall be with you a little while longer, and then I go to him who sent me. You will seek me and not find me, and where I am, you cannot come. Now, of course, Jesus was talking about returning to the Father, going back to heaven. But the Jews said among themselves, where does he intend to go that we shall not find him? Does he intend to go to the dispersion among the Greeks and teach the Greeks? Now, remember, at this time in history, the majority of the Jewish population was outside of the country. It was just a small number of Jews that returned to Israel after the Babylonian captivity. And the majority of Jews remained outside of the country, and that was known as the dispersion, or the Greek word was the diaspora. And so that's what they're speculating. Well, he says he's going to go somewhere. It must mean that he's going to go to the diaspora. He's going to go to the Greeks, to the Jews that are there outside of the land, and he's going to teach the Greeks. Now, what is this thing that he said, you will seek me and not find me, and where I come, or where I am, you cannot come. So they completely misunderstood what Jesus was saying. Now, he's going to come back and say similar things later and actually define them even more clearly to them. But now we come to the 37th verse. And this takes us now to the last day of the feast. And this is where we want to really put our emphasis. So it was on the last day, the great day of the feast. Now, the Feast of Tabernacles was a 7-day feast. But there was an additional day added to it. So in all, it was a feast that lasted 8 days. And on the 8th day, those rituals and things were no longer occurring. They had ended at the 7th day. And now the 8th day was kind of just a final day of rest and relaxation and preparation for the pilgrims to go back to the various places that they had come from. Now, remember, we talked about that processional of priests that would go down to the pool of Siloam. And for 6 days, they would come up the hill and they would bring those pitchers of water and they would pour them out. But on the 7th day, they would do that 7 times. And that was sort of in commemoration of the taking of the promised land, the Battle of Jericho. You remember God instructed them to march around the city 6 days, and on the 7th day to march around it 7 times, and then to blow their trumpets. So that was the way they did this ritual, reminding them of that entrance into the promised land. So all of that had been going on each and every day. But now on the last day, the final day of the feast, when the priest would have normally been there with those pitchers of water, pouring them out on the stone, reminding the people of God's gracious provision for them in the wilderness when the rock was smitten and the water came forth. That's the background. In the midst of that, Jesus stood and cried out, saying, if anyone thirst, let him come to me and drink. So you see, having that background, you can imagine how dramatic this was. I mean, every day for the past 7 days, the people had gathered and watched this ritual go on. And no doubt, although some of them would have understood all of the implications of it and the references back to the past, there would have no doubt been many that probably just stood on and wonder, just really wondering, what does all of this mean? All of that happened so long ago. But how does it relate to us today? How does it impact our lives at this time in history. And on that final day, as they're once again gathered in this festive mood, and no doubt right at that very same time, this is when Jesus comes forth and he stands probably right in that very place where they had been pouring out the water, and he cries out, "If anyone thirst, let him come to me and drink." Now, the thirst that Jesus is describing is, of course, of a spiritual nature. He's not offering them water in the literal physical sense, but he's appealing to that spiritual thirst that he would know would be in their hearts. When we think of thirsting in a spiritual sense, what we're talking about is a person who comes to that place where there's an anxiety in their soul, where there's a sense that something's wrong and it needs to be righted, and nothing that I'm able to do is resolving this conflict. It's a place of conviction of sin. You know, when the Spirit of God begins to move upon a person's life, what happens is they begin to come under conviction of sin. And things that you might have done for years that you never really thought twice about, you suddenly start to feel uneasy about those things. You start to be troubled in your heart and in your mind over those things. That's what Jesus is talking about. The person who's coming to that place of conviction of sin. It's also a reference to longing after peace of conscience. This is a person who the things of the world are no longer satisfying them. And the things that one time sort of numbed their conscience or placated their conscience, those things no longer work. Where at one time, you know, if their conscience began to feel a little bit disturbed, they'd just go out and distract themselves with something, some sort of pleasure or some material object or, you know, something that would just remove that little pricking of the heart. And I remember before I became a Christian, when I was young, and I remember when that conviction would start to come upon me, I would do that very thing. I just turn my mind in another direction. I'd turn the music up. I'd get out of the house. I'd go do something to distract myself from that type of thing. But that's what Jesus is describing here. He's describing the sense that there has to be something more than rituals and religion have to offer. See, he's appealing to the people who the ritual did not satisfy them. The religion, as it stood, they sensed that it was empty. And so he's appealing to those who are looking for something beyond just a ritual, looking for something beyond just a religious activity. He's appealing to those who are longing to know and experience God. And notice, if anyone thirst, it's a universal invitation. If anyone thirst, if there's anyone anywhere at any time who is anxious in their soul, who is sensing a conviction of sin, who's longing for their conscience to be alleviated, who's dissatisfied with the rituals of their religion, who wants to know the God behind these things, perhaps. You see, the sad thing is that there are so many who settle for these other things. They settle for the pleasure. They settle for the materialism. They settle for the ritual. They settle for the religion. They're very happy to be religious. And for them, that's sufficient. That's good enough. We don't need to go beyond that. I've got my ritual. I've got my little thing that I do. And that makes me feel better about myself. And I'm content with that. And they don't want to go deep. They don't want to encounter God Himself. They're happy to just have a religion. And that's a tragedy. But the invitation is to anyone who will thirst. And it is an invitation, notice, to come to me and to drink. You see, Jesus calls men to himself. That's what this is all about. Jesus didn't say, if anyone thirst, let him get religion. If anyone thirst, send him over to the church. Now, hopefully, you could send him to the church and he could find Jesus there. But there's a lot of people in churches who have never found the Lord. The church is really, of course, this is just a gathering of people who believe in Jesus. We come together to worship him and to be built up in the faith. But it's to Jesus that we're called to come. Not to a ritual. Not to religion. Not to good works, even. If anyone thirsts, let him clean up his act. If anyone thirsts, let him live a better life. If anyone thirsts, let him keep the Ten Commandments. That's not what Jesus said. He said, if anyone thirsts, let him come to me and drink. See, that's the wonderful thing about this. This isn't religion. This isn't a ritual. This is a relationship with God. We're talking to people about a living person who is God, our Creator, who loves us and wants to have a relationship with us, the very relationship that we were created to experience. You know, when a person says, well, how do you know there's a God? How do you know Jesus is the Messiah? You know, you can really simply just answer him, well, I know him. That's how I know. I've had an experience with a person. And that's always what this message has been. Now, sadly, it's been distorted and diluted over the ages. And as I mentioned, and as is true still to this very day, you can find churches and people attending churches and people even leading churches who do not know the God they claim to be worshiping and serving. You can go all over Europe today and you can find these wonderful monuments to Christianity, these beautiful cathedrals, these vast, glorious edifices. But you walk in and ask any questions about God, and you'll find real quickly that that's not what this thing is here for. This is just a museum, is what it has become. In so many cases.
And now let's join Pastor Brian in the studio as he shares about this month's resource on Back to Basics.
I've read through a number of, you know, daily devotionals, a little thought for each day of the year. One of the great things about the Wisdom for Today devotional is it actually takes you all the way through the Bible, from Genesis to Revelation. So you're going to make your journey from Genesis 1 to Revelation 22 by the time you've gone through. Of course, you're not going to cover every verse, every chapter, but highlighted devotional thoughts from each book of the Bible.
Thanks, Pastor Brian, for stopping by the studio and sharing about this month's resource. You can order the book Wisdom for Today by Chuck Smith by going to our website, backtobasicsradio.com. Scroll down until you see the photo of Wisdom for Today, and then click on the Donate button. When you give a gift to Back to Basics, we'll send you the Wisdom for Today devotional by Pastor Chuck that is sure to be one of your all-time devotional favorites. And it's also an excellent guide for reading the Bible in 1 year. It's our way of saying thank you for your generous support of this ministry. We'd also like to remind you that all of our other resources are waiting for you at backtobasicsradio.com or by calling our request line at 1-800-733-6443. That's 1-800-733-6443. Our desire is to encourage you in your daily walk with God. We'll continue tomorrow with more valuable insights from Pastor Brian as we study together in the Gospel of John. Back to Basics is the preaching and teaching ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.